This is Time and Other Thieves, reflections on another month of living and learning. I'm Sarah B. It's already March 3rd as I'm starting to write this, so I'm running behind schedule. But I'm the one who sets the schedule, so it's fine. February was a busy month, and March is shaking out to be similar, but at least for the second half of it, I won't have my copy editing class to worry about. That class will end on March 17th, and since it's the last one in the certificate program I'm doing, completing it means I will get my certificate. I've been dutifully plugging away at these copy editing classes since last April, and I am ready to be done, especially with the damn discussion boards. I feel like a superhero for managing to come up with an original post every week, and at least two responses to classmates' posts for 40 weeks. The copy editing certificate program at UC San Diego Extension consists of four 10-week courses with a couple of weeks off in between each one. Some people, maybe a lot, don't do all four in one straight shot, but I wanted to bang it out. And once I'm done, I'm going to start marketing my editing business in more earnest. Or that's what I've been saying I'll do. I admit I'm not feeling as excited about editing as I was this time last year, but I think that's because the types of things I've been editing for the copy editing program, academic writing for the most part, are not the types of things I plan on editing in real life. I do not, for instance, want to edit anything with a references or works cited page. Literary novels, short stories, memoirs, personal essays, that's my jam. Preferably with writers who aren't in a crazy rush to get through the editing process. I haven't been in the industry for long, but I've already gotten the impression that it's common for writers to want quick turnarounds on manuscripts, and I don't get it. How long did it take you to write that book, and now you want it edited in 2 weeks? Anyway, that'll be a reason to celebrate finishing that program. I've learned a lot, and I really do feel more legit as an editor, having taken these classes. And thanks to a new writing project, I've learned firsthand how indispensable editors can be. I don't want to provide too many details yet, so for now I'll just say that someone recently asked me, along with some other folks, to write a speech of sorts for an event that will take place in August. I had a hard time coming up with something to write, but I persevered and got some words down and passed those words along to the woman who's in charge of refining the speeches for the event in question, and thus began a back and forth of her making edits and other suggestions and me revising accordingly. I was humbled by the obviousness of some of her edits, and after cranking out four different versions of the speech, I was so grateful to have her as my editor. And she isn't even an editor by trade. I don't know if she was expecting to play that role for me, but she did it very well, and I felt like we had a real partnership. The fourth and hopefully final version wound up being much different from all the preceding ones. I even changed the thesis, and it felt much truer to me. I was genuinely proud of it in a way I hadn't been with the other drafts. So my takeaway was the classic, if at first you don't succeed, try, try, and try again, and editors rock. I hope I can be as instrumental in the improvement of other people's manuscripts as this woman was in mine. Since last month's episode, I also attended a sewing meditation retreat. That is, a retreat that involved meditation and sewing as meditation. It took place at Great Tree Zen Temple in Alexander, not even 30 minutes from my house. I stayed there for 5 nights, which in and of itself was quite challenging for me, being such a homebody, so attached to my husband and my dogs and my routine, and my own cooking. At Great Tree, we ate every meal out of orioki bowls, which is how they do it at Buddhist monasteries in Japan, and it involves a lot of ritual, including chanting at different parts of the meal process. And it felt like a lot to learn and a lot to get wrong. It was all just a little too involved for my tastes. Eating a meal felt like work. And after every meal, my fellow retreatants and I, there were four of us to start, plus the cook, would clean the kitchen together, so that was more work. And the rest of the time we were sewing, also quite work-like, or meditating. Not work exactly, but certainly not easy either. Every morning we woke at 5:30 to a clamorous clanging bell and had to be in the meditation hall by 6 for 40 minutes of zazen, seated meditation, followed by 10 minutes of kinhin, walking meditation, followed by 40 more minutes of zazen, always facing the wall. I sat near a window, so in that period of time I watched the sky change from black to pale blue. Then there would be a short service in which we'd all chant the Okesa Sutra and do some prostrations, then breakfast, then maybe time for a short walk before meditating again from 9 to 9:30, then sewing from 10 until noon, then lunch, then sewing until dinner, after which there'd be time for rest or maybe a shower before one more 30-minute meditation, followed by optional sewing before lights out at 9. What were we sewing, you might ask? Rakusus. Rakusus are, to quote Wikipedia, a traditionally Japanese garment worn around the neck of Zen Buddhists who have taken the precepts. It can also signify lay ordination. It is made of 16 or more strips of cloth, sewn together into a brick-like pattern by the student during their period of preparation for their jukai, or ordination ceremony. And Jukai is taking the precepts, which I've already done. At Great Tree, anyone who wants to take the precepts must first sew a rakusu, so that was what the other three students were doing at the retreat. But at my sangha, you don't need to sew a rakusu in order to take the precepts. You do have to sew one, however, if you want to get ordained as a lay minister, so that's why I was there. My teacher from my sangha, for whom I already had to sew a stole when asking her to be my teacher, which I had to do 3 times, was leading this retreat. She has sewn many a rakusu in her day and absolutely loves teaching others how to do it. And mind you, all of this sewing was done by hand, which I much prefer to machine sewing. I simply want nothing to do with a bobbin. I wasn't able to finish my rakusu in the 5 days of the retreat, but I've been meeting with my teacher on Sunday afternoons to work on it, and I will probably complete it in our next session, which will be oh so satisfying. And it really is a lovely form of meditation. With each stitch, you silently repeat the mantra, "I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha." But retreats are not my favorite. If you've been listening to Time and Other Thieves for a while, you might recall the Southern Dharma debacle of 2023. My experience at Great Tree was better than that in many ways, but in other ways it was worse. And about meditation retreats in general, I'm learning this. They're hard. When I've told people I'm about to do a retreat, they typically say something like, "That sounds amazing." But amazing is not the word I'd use to describe such experiences. The hardest parts for me are being out of my own space and having to deal with other people. So a couple weeks ago, while sewing with my teacher, I asked her if one of my required retreats, I have to do several for the lay minister training, could be a solo at-home retreat. She said no. "Part of the reason for going on retreat is that it teaches you how to be in community," she said. I get it, and I know it's good for me, but maybe I can find a retreat, probably an expensive one, that isn't quite so community-oriented. So aside from that and the aforementioned writing project and copy editing class, I've just been plugging along with weekly therapy sessions and other tasks and activities of basic living. I don't have much to report, and I don't want to force it. I considered not doing an episode at all this month, but instead I decided to just do a shorty. Maybe next month I'll have more to say, or a book to reflect on. I did finish reading the Nick Cave book I mentioned last month, Faith, Hope, and Carnage, which I greatly enjoyed, and I read a book from 1918 called Married Love by Marie Carmichael Stopes, inspired to do so by my grandparents' early courtship love letters. My grandfather gave a copy of said book to my grandmother, and they wrote back and forth about some of its ideas, so I was curious to read it for myself. And it was quite interesting as a historical document, seeing how people were thinking about sex back then. Stopes asserted that most women, based on some research study or other, desire sex about every 2 weeks. So if men want to have it more often than that, they need to work extra hard at wooing their partners. I've also read a book about psychoanalytic group therapy called The Group Therapy Experience by Lewis Ormont, which has given me lots of great ideas for running a group of my own, but nothing I feel inspired to reflect on here. At least, not yet. And I listened to the audio version of Ann Patchett's latest novel, Tom Lake, narrated by Meryl Streep, which was, of course, excellent. The next time I check in with you, it will officially be spring. My birthday happens to fall on the first day of spring this year, March 19th. I'll be turning 42. As a gift to myself, I commissioned a local jewelry designer, Alice Scott, to make a big silver S pendant on a long chain, inspired by the U pendant on a long chain that children's book editor Ursula Nordstrom wore. I'm wearing it right now, and I love it. Objects can be so pleasing, can't they? I've never thought of myself as a materialistic person, but it seems the older I get, the more I appreciate objects. I think I know what William Carlos Williams meant when he wrote, "No ideas but in things." Thanks for listening.